Welcome to the RepChat Inside Stories series, conversations with creative talent and creative entrepreneurial businesses. We discover the inside stories that inspire and motivate creative people to do what they do. Welcome to the RepChat virtual studio, and today we're very honored to have Rebecca Potts-Aguirre in our virtual studio. And Rebecca is an artist based in Los Angeles whose practice centers around documenting daily life. Her work explores themes of feminism and gendered labor, memory and visibility, trauma and healing. With a background in printmaking, Potts-Aguirre works across media as materiality is central to her concepts. She's a member of Split Milk Gallery and is listed in the Created Directories, All She Makes, and Visionary Art Collective. She was represented by Stay Home Gallery for 2021. Her work has been exhibited through the US and Europe and in Australia at spaces including the Mildred Lane Kemper Art Museum, Zhao Bi Art Center New York Studio Gallery, ArtShare LA, and Solar Contemporary. She has many strings to her bow, and I know she also has a very popular podcast. So welcome, Rebecca.
Thank you so much. I'm so happy to be here.
Really happy to talk about so many things that we feel are really relevant and interesting to art itself and to creativity. So Rebecca, when we began speaking before I pressed the recording button, you talked about a little bit about your own work. So I'd like to talk about the podcasts and some of the philosophies that guide you and inspire you. But how did you get into doing what you do?
Well, doing what I do has many layers. So and I've written a bit about this sort of idea of dual careers. And in my case, maybe it's like triple careers. So I have been an art educator for over 15 years, teaching at the elementary level, middle school, high school. So sort of all through, I guess for you, it would be primary, you know, all through secondary, and now write curricula as sort of my day job. But during that time, I've also always been pursuing my own art career. And about 3 years ago, started a podcast called Teaching Artists Podcast. So kind of talking about having those sort of dual careers and how to navigate doing both things and having passion in both educating young people and making art yourself, being an art teacher and an artist. How do those fit together?
So you're a busy lady, Rebecca. You have your own studio, your own practice, and you've got a podcast, and also you're in the teaching sector. In the way that you, in your own art, I'm just looking at some of the pictures here, and they're really, really colourful and expressive. Your style and your expression, what were the influences around your work?
All of my training was in printmaking, which I think there was a little mention of that in my bio. Mm-hmm. So I was a printmaker all through school and then, you know, finished and was like, oh, I don't have these facilities anymore. Like you get out of university and you're like, I don't have a gigantic press at home. So what am I going to do? So I did continue some, you know, small like hand printing, but I also had my daughter, and that kind of shifted how I was making art and what I was making. And it really kind of derailed me for a few years. I didn't make very much when I was a brand new mom. But she also, my daughter also kind of led me back to my art making. I started playing with Play-Doh with her and thinking of it first as just like, let's explore color together. And I was seeing how she was kind of mixing these colors. And I think of it as very brave color mixing, because she would take it, you know, kids put these two colors together, and, you know, especially, you know, those of us who have any color theory sort of training, we're like, it's going to turn brown. It's going to turn brown. Ah, you know, there's this fear. but she would stop right at the perfect moment, and it would just be this gorgeous sort of blend. So seeing that was really inspiring and made me start thinking, well, I can make art kind of along, I can play with her while I'm making art by using Play-Doh. So I started experimenting with Play-Doh as this sort of paint medium, because I had never been a sculptor. I was always just 2D. And for some reason that still was like, I'm going to make it flat. So I did, I started playing with Play-Doh as a way to get back to art making with my 2-year-old and at the time. And that has sort of grown into my current practice, where I am still using some Play-Doh, but I've also started using polymer clay. And the more I dug into it and looked up the history of these materials, the more interesting it became to me as, you know, a material to stick with. Because, you know, Play-Doh started as a wallpaper cleaner. It started as this sort of domestic tool, like you have soot on your walls because this is how you're heating your home. And to clean it off, use this little like ball of clay, rub it on your wall. So there's this idea of like gendered labor behind the material, but then there's also this idea of play behind the material. So I love that it's getting at both of those things. And polymer clay to some extent too, you know, started as a way to make dolls and jewelry and still is used for those things. So there's this like, again, gendered labor, but also play and childhood that I'm really conceptually trying to bring together in my work.
So what we're hearing is this play with your daughter inspired you to look at different things, and did in any way preconceptions about what you can and cannot do?
Definitely. Yeah, absolutely. I feel like as much as I enjoyed getting an MFA, grad school also also derailed me a little bit, because there was so much of, you need to have a big, heavy concept. You need to be doing all this research. You can't just make for the sake of making. There's no sort of like play involved. And coming back to art after that experience, and then after having a kid and starting like reapproaching it from solely a play approach, was really, really healthy and helpful. A really good way to get back to it and sort of flip things around.
And to discover new aspects and take risks, that your daughter did, but there was something in her to said, okay, I'm going to pull back, and finding this, you know, wonderful new medium to express your art. And I know in some reading some of your work is that water features heavily as well as an element. Can you tell us something about that?
Yeah, it's something I'm still exploring. I'm still kind of digging into why I'm so drawn to water, but I have used it in my work for decades. Even, you know, back in grad school, I was doing sort of very conceptual work around climate change and looking at melting glaciers and sort of tracking the melt level, how long it was taking to melt, and using water, like collecting rainwater. So I've been exploring what that connection is for me. And part of it, I think, is from childhood. So my dad worked for the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency, around water quality issues. So I kind of grew up always having that like in my ear, in my mind, and grew up rafting and kind of very close to nature, very close to water. But for me now, it's also, I just love how water kind of embodies many different emotions that, you know, I can be sitting watching my daughter splash around in the pool and seeing like her joy, but then also having this sort of fear in the back of my mind, you know, the fear of the water like engulfing her. I can be, you know, in the shower and like crying, like letting that water out of me. And then that makes me also think about how water is such a big part of us. It's almost 60% of our bodies. and it cycles through the environment. So it's like connecting us to the environment, to the earth, to each other. Like, is the water in my body water that was in someone else's body at some point? You know, I get it. I go down these rabbit holes of like, how are we all connected in this way? And then a recent rabbit hole that is also to me connected to this, these ideas about water, is looking into fetal microchimerism. So that's how your baby's DNA while your baby's like in the womb kind of seeps into your body. So potentially, like, they've found decades later, mothers of sons have some little bits of male DNA in them, that it's, you're never completely disconnected. And it goes the other way as well. Like, the child has little bits of the mother's DNA in them. So it's this, you know, you're always connected. This separation and connection is something that I think a lot about in my work. And to me, again, like, water is a big part of that, thinking of like the blood and the cells dividing and how those drops look like water as well. So yeah, I could keep going down these sort of like tangents and rabbit holes with water.
Well, we do know that, you know, it's the element which can change from ice to raging torrents to steam to snow, and it's
so amazing.
Yeah, and it needs to be contained, the water, doesn't it, in some way? So maybe your art in some way contains this art. So I'd really like to talk a little bit more about your process. So how does the artwork begin?
Ooh, so it's, I think in that bio it mentioned that I'm documenting daily life. So it really begins with photography. So I take a lot of photos, and probably every mother can relate to this, that, you know, you're constantly, especially in this sort of digital age, you're constantly whipping out your phone to take pictures of your kid and what's around you. And as an artist, I'm also kind of randomly whipping out my phone. If I see a color combination I like, ooh, that building and the way the sky looks right now, that's pretty. Like, I just need a photo of that. Or that's an interesting sort of composition that I see in front of me. So constantly documenting just what I see and documenting my kid. So I have, you know, thousands of these pictures, and then I kind of go back through and curate them. And often I will find a few that I like, you know, bits and pieces of, and I'll kind of piece them back together to make exactly a composition that I want. And then that becomes sort of like, that's the sketch for my work. And sometimes I do actually like look at that photo and sketch it. And sometimes I print the photo out as is and work directly on top of it. But then when I'm working with polymer clay or Play-Doh, I work on glass. So it's this reversing, which brings back my printmaking background, where everything you do is in reverse. So I still work in reverse, where I have a photo like under glass, and then I'm very meticulously piecing bits of clay to kind of create that image. But again, it's reverse. So kind of the opposite way that I would make a painting, where in a painting, you kind of start with the background and like work your way forward. For this, because it's backwards, I start with the very first, the foreground, the stuff in the very front, and work my way backwards.
Oh, that's fascinating. This idea of the dual career. So I know you've got the podcast, you've got your own practice, and you've also got the curriculum and teaching. So if we might just delve into the curriculum and the teaching part. I know you've got your daughter, and there's a real passion for education and educating people, Rebecca. And I also know that you're very committed to your social activism as well through that. So can we just talk a little bit about the education side? Do you have a personal philosophy guiding that?
Yeah, I mean, now I would say it's definitely evolved over the years. My philosophy of education, of teaching, when I was in the classroom still, I had shifted towards a full choice art classroom, which means, you know, you're not, as the teacher, you're not sort of dictating what students are making. You're helping them through the process of being an artist. So they are creating something of their own idea, and you're helping them figure, like, how do artists get ideas? Where does an idea come from? Okay, you have an idea, like, what do you do with that? Where do you take it? Do you need to research? Do you need to experiment with materials? Like, how does, and then what happens when you run into a challenge? So kind of helping them through that whole process. So that's to say, a big part of my philosophy is giving students choice, empowering students to be sort of in charge of their own learning and their own creativity, but in a way that is really, you know, you're creating the structure for them that can help them do that. And then another big sort of thing that I am constantly working on is this idea of providing sort of windows and mirrors. And I've heard added, I think it was Dr. Rudine Sims Bishop's added sliding glass doors. So that's this idea that you're giving opportunities for students to see cultures and people that are different from themselves. Those windows, they're looking out, seeing something they don't have experience with. You're giving them opportunities to see mirrors. They see themselves reflected in your curriculum and in what's happening in the classroom. And then the sliding glass door is kind of a way where they can open that window and step through. So they can really, like, dive into something they haven't experienced before, they're not comfortable with, but kind of opening that up, giving them that chance.
It's almost the guidance around the idea, how best to develop the idea. And then also connecting to things which reflect their experience of life and other ideas, which opens it up in a very natural and fun way. It sounds like a lot of fun in your classes.
I hope so.
And what have children to teach us, Rebecca?
Oh, so much. I feel like, I mean, just again, looking at my daughter's, like, color mixing as an example, I saw that so often with when I was teaching at the elementary level, especially where we mentioned earlier, I think before recording, that sometimes creativity is sort of like taught out of us. And
very much
those the young students haven't had that so much. Like, by the time you're in upper elementary, you're starting to already kind of limit yourself. But those little ones, they are so brave with materials and with colors and just sort of out of the box, outside the box thinking, that really, I think, is something we all need to embrace. And for me, when I was teaching them, that was just a constant source of inspiration. And, you know, seeing how they would flip a material to do something that I wouldn't have expected it to do. But that would show me, oh, this is a possibility. Like, maybe I can show that to other students, or maybe it's useful for me in my own art practice. I feel like there's a lot to learn there. There's also so much to learn just about, you know, accepting each other and being okay with differences. I feel like that's something, especially here in our country, we need to really work on.
We talked about this idea of the creativity be kind of drummed out of people or drained out of people because there's a right way and there's a wrong way. And sometimes it's in the head of the teacher to say, you need to do it this way. And I wonder if that's always the right thing. So are there times where you think, I do really need to step in here? Or do you just let them flow wherever they want to go?
I would say if there's a time, like the biggest times where I would feel that need to step in, I'm not perfect. I wouldn't always do this, but I would try to kind of, before stepping in, step back and ask myself, why? Is this a me issue or a them issue? Is this something where, like, I'm pushing back on whatever they're doing because it makes me uncomfortable, but that doesn't affect anyone else in the classroom? In that case, probably step back, shut your mouth, and reflect. But if it is, you know, if it's something that, you know, potentially endangers someone, themselves or other students, obviously that's a case where you step in and say, this is how you need to use the tool.
If they're using their paintbrush as a weapon, maybe time to step in.
No, not okay.
I was very interested in the play aspect and the learning. And learning about themselves through the creation and learning life lessons and ways to express themselves. And I'm wondering, that would be so useful for adults, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Some of the lessons that I've written and curricula I'm developing, I do think of, this would be great to just lead, you know, like a group of grown-ups through.
Even if not for the artwork particular, as a way of self-awareness and self-development, of saying, you know, life can be very different if you allow it to be. Mm-hmm. I also know that you have a very good podcast. So I'd like to hear about the inspiration for that, the kind of guests that you invite on, and how that is also, as you say, it seems like you've got multiple careers, not just two. Right. How that fits into the mix.
Yeah, the fitting it in is always a challenge when, as you know too, because you're doing so many things, that it's kind of juggling parenting, day job, art career, other, passion projects like a podcast. So all my calendar is, a jigsaw puzzle, just where does it all fit in? And I have to actually calendar out, like, this is my studio time. This is a park date with my daughter. It's all in there so that it can't get pushed away or deprioritized. So that's sort of one aspect there. But the inspiration for the podcast was really trying to marry these two careers. So I was, at the time that I started it, I was teaching K-5, so like primary school art, and I was trying to kind of build an art career that had floundered for a little bit, because I was still, that was when my daughter was maybe 3 or 4, I started the podcast. So I was relatively new to being back into making art. So I was kind of doing these two things. And at the same time, I was listening to a ton of podcasts, but they were always like one or the other. There were podcasts about art and making art, and there were podcasts about teaching art, but I didn't find any that talked about both things and how both things can potentially inspire each other. So I sort of naively was like, I'll start that. Let's do it. I'm sure there are other people trying to do both things and like passionate about both things. And so that's your question of who is on the podcast. It is artists who teach, and usually that's visual artists, but sometimes I've had a few musicians on, which have been really interesting, especially with an audio format. I can share clips of their work, and that's been really beautiful. And then the teaching, I've been trying to keep it to sort of the teaching children, so like K-12, because I saw a bit of a lack of respect for serious artists who also teach younger students. It seems like in order to be a serious artist, if you're going to teach, you have to be a professor, right? Quote unquote, serious artists, like artists with a capital A. But you can't do that if you're also a teacher. You can do that if you're a professor. Like there's this sort of like gap there. So I was trying to highlight those artists who teach young kids.
Also quite a lot of status and hierarchy in this.
Yeah. Yeah, so that I was a little bit riled up and was like, I'm going to push back against that.
The other thing that we touched upon was your own social activism. And I know feminism, gender labor, the climate crisis. So the link between those things, I just wanted to understand, is that expressed through the art, or is that something you talk about on the podcast, or how does that fit into the work that you do?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I honestly probably don't do enough now. It's, before becoming a mom, I would, go to marches and protest and all of that sort of like really physical, tangible aspects there, but I haven't done that much. And maybe now that my daughter's getting a little older, I would feel okay bringing her to some of that. But yeah, it is through the art. I try to talk about some of those things. And then in the podcast also, I feel like I have sort of created this platform where I can talk about some of those issues. A big issue that I talk about a lot that I feel like just needs to be talked about, especially in education, is racism. And that's one that we bring up pretty often on the podcast and share. And just in thinking through who am I going to highlight, who am I going to sort of like bring their voice front and center on my little bit of a platform that I have, how can I diversify the voices that I'm sharing? So those are all things that are kind of maybe going on more in the back of my head, in the back of like planning these things.
Well, I mean, your passion and your commitment really comes through, you know, through all aspects, and also to keep it playful and fun for you. So I wanted to thank you very much, Rebecca. I've really, really learned a lot listening to you, and this whole role of the art teacher and almost gifting children with the possibility of creativity. And it's so sad sometimes that human beings, when they get older after the age of sometimes about 13, just forget it all and then go down another path and become more serious. And so it's really very refreshing to see such a wonderful approach. And I know you're very busy and committed, so I really thank you for making time for this podcast. Before you go, could you just let the listeners know where to find you? I will share that in the show notes as well, but in your own words.
Yeah, thank you so much. This has been such a great conversation. I'm going to go back and have to like rethink some of these things. So so I am on Instagram at Teaching Artist Podcast, and that's the main sort of social media that I'm using. So, you know, you can message me there. I also have a website for the podcast, just teachingartistpodcast.com. And then my personal Instagram is POTS Art. So simple POTTS Art. And I'm open there as well. You know, reach out, say hello.
Yeah. Well, we're going to put it all in the show notes. And thank you for being such a power of inspiration and inclusivity. And, you know, in Rebcat Creations, we believe that creativity is our superpower. That's the thing we need to hold on to. So just for the sheer ability to think outside the box, as you mentioned, and do things differently. So thank you, Rebecca.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the RebChat Inside Stories series. We hope you enjoyed it. To feature your inside story, contact us at www.rebcatcreations.com or follow us on Instagram at RebCatCreations.